Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, top of the morning to ya. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We got Jim O'Toran. You see what I did there? I took the O from my name and I stuck it in the middle. Because today everybody's Irish. And we've got Dave O'Schwan and Andy O'Mazer with me today. Good morning, guys.
I think it would sound better if it was McMazer, wouldn't it?
Oh, you like McMazer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, very good. How about you, Dave O'Schwan? Better, yeah. I like that.
Davey O'Schwanny.
Davey O'Schwanny. How about Schwannessy?
You could do that, too.
Davey O'Schwanessy and Andy McMazer.
There you go.
And Jim O'Toran. Very good. And now we've got Green Dean on the phone. How you doing, Green Dean?
That's great. I took the day off, and I've got the lucky charm leprechaun filling in for me today.
So where are you, Green Dean?
I'm getting ready to be in the Southside St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Are you at home, or are you at WGN Studios ready to stage for your float? Or where are you? We want to know where Green Dean is today.
I'm at home right at the moment, but I'm leaving shortly. And I'm going to meet Bozo at WGN TV.
For a quick coffee and a cigarette?
Yeah, you know, we'll get a little Bozo, we'll get a little Brona Tumulty, we'll get a little, I believe Ray Cortopassi is going to be joining us.
Oh, I'm sure he's very Irish. He sounds very Irish.
Yeah, so does Jim O'Toran or whatever
he is. Jim O'Toran! I took the O and stuck it in the middle for today.
Yeah, you sure did stick in the middle of that.
Isn't Alyssa Donovan from WGN TV, isn't she Irish too?
I believe, I'm not 100% sure who is on our float. All I know is that there's Bozo and a lot of us. And I think Alyssa's going to be there. I know Brona definitely is going to be there, and Ray.
Are you going to be wearing the green there, Green Dean? What do you got? What's your wardrobe today?
I'll find something appropriate to wear for the thing. I've got a you know how I like to wear those fedoras
every once
in a while for special occasions.
Do you have a green one?
I have a special St. Patrick's Day fedora that I'll be sporting today.
Very nice.
For sure. But I have other green stuff as well.
Do you have the nice shamrock antenna? You know,
I don't know what that means.
You know, they put
shamrock antenna.
Yeah, you know, they put the little antennas on top of the. Then the shamrocks look like antenna from like a. You've seen those with the springs. Boy, Dean, you're in quite the mood this morning.
You put them on your head.
Yeah, you've never. Okay, well, when you're on the float, you'll see about 200,000 people wearing them today.
No, I will not be one of those 200,000 people.
How about a green vest? You got a green vest?
I do not have a green vest.
No. Oh. So are you going to be singing Irish songs? I mean, what, you know, just be waving? What are you going to be doing, throwing out candy?
I'm going to mostly be, you're not supposed to be throwing things off of the float. A lot of people, that's a common misconception. You think that, you throw things off. But that is actually against the rules.
Ah.
And we have actually seen people get hurt when other floats have thrown things off and people make a mad dash for whatever's been thrown on the street. So we do not participate in the throwing things, people almost getting run over by motor vehicles.
So the Southside Irish Parade kicked
off a free, for the sake of a free stickers bar, it's not worth it.
You don't want a free Mary Jane?
I would love a free Mary Jane, but not thrown off of a vehicle, no.
So it kicks off where? Like 103rd and Western, I think I saw in there?
103rd and Western. We'll be going to my old neighborhood. I actually, grew up just 6 blocks away from that.
Oh!
I grew up at 109th and Artesian, so it's my old hood.
So you really are Green Dean. You really are Green Dean.
This is my old neighborhood. So we'll go and we'll meet, we'll gather. Some people, if I know my St. Patrick's Day parades, some people will already have been imbibing. so you know that you know when we did our special broadcast from 115 Bourbon Street on Friday, we did our whole show out there, which
right.
was amazing, by the way.
Yeah, I saw you shaving heads.
We all arrived. Yeah, we arrived around 5 o'clock in the morning to people on the block already drinking green beer at 5 o'clock in the morning. So
it's a tradition.
God bless them.
It's a tradition.
God bless them. God bless them and their shillelaghs too.
No shillelagh for you today, Dean.
I have to say that we did. I made. You know, we did a lot of fun things. All the highlights are on the web. But I made some special St. Patrick's Day treats. I made some cupcakes made with Guinness.
Oh,
stout.
Nice.
And the frosting was made out of Bailey's Irish
Ooh,
cream.
Look at you.
And it was delicious. I made some deviled eggs. I made them. This was my mom's recipe for deviled eggs, and I got to say, they were delicious. But I did something I don't think my mom has ever done, that when I cut the eggs and, you know, got ready to prepare them, I took the hardened egg whites and dyed them green.
Oh, my goodness. You are green, Dean. Look at you. My gosh, are you into this?
And it was fantastic. And just because I had to throw some Greek in the whole thing, I put some Greek yogurt. I dyed it green.
Oh, my gosh.
And mixed it with Lucky Charms marshmallows. You can buy the marshmallows separately. I mixed it with the marshmallows and then topped it with Lucky Charms cereal, and it was fantastic. And then we had a shepherd's pie eating contest.
Oh, I love shepherd's pie.
We had four people on stage with us. We put a big plate of shepherd's pie in each of them. Shepherd's pie, by the way, I did not make, was provided to us by our friends at County Fair Foods, which is a famous grocery store at 108th and Western. I used to go there when I was a kid. It's one of the best grocery stores you'll ever find, and they make a fantastic shepherd's pie. Mm. They provided it. But the thing with this contest was you couldn't use your hands. You had to stick your face into the
like a pie-eating contest,
pie.
Yeah.
Like the pie-eating contest, exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super fun. Big, big fun.
And, of course, those Lucky Charms are magically delicious, so.
They were magically delicious. I did. I'm not going to lie. I did sneak some while I was preparing my Greek green yogurt with Lucky Charms.
So you don't do, like, a corned beef gyro, then, to bring in your Greek side and the Irish? You don't
well,
do that?
I did corned beef. I did some Reuben, little mini Reuben sandwiches last year. So I didn't want to do corned beef this year. I wanted to do something completely different. So, you know, we'll do corned beef again next year, probably.
Cool. So you will be the wearing of the green. You'll be getting your little green fedora on, and then you'll be heading to the studios. And then, I think at 10, maybe when you're at, will you be at the WGN studios on Addison there around 10-ish or so?
I will, yeah. Well, we can check back in with you. And let me just tell you something. You know, we're going to go from 2501 West Bradley Place all the way to the south side.
Right.
There is nothing like a ride on the expressway with Bozo in the car. just to see people reacting. You know, people glance over while they're driving. They glance over and they see Bozo in the passenger seat. There's nothing more festive.
Oh my gosh! That you don't have a convertible, though, do you?
We do. That would mess up his hair and my hair.
How great is that? All right. Well,
imagine how you would do in a convertible.
Well, extra tape and extra glue. Thank you very much.
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Green Dean. We will be excited to hear more updates from you, parade side. And
I'm sure I'll have an exciting update when I get there.
Yeah, hopefully
exactly who's on the float at that point. Yeah,
that'll be great. Yeah, definitely. So that's Dean Green Dean, who will be checking in with us periodically throughout the show. I am Jim Toronto filling in for Dean this morning from 9 to 11. But listen, anyway, we've got Dave Schwann and Andy Mazur. We'll be talking with both of them throughout the show, and also talking to Andy a little later about the big news. Wow. How about that for sports news, Andy? You got to love this. Huh?
It was nice to go to dinner and get that alert last night that the Bears moved on from Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And, you know, the return has been kind of what everybody's been talking about because they only got a sixth-round pick, which could turn into a fourth-round pick if he takes 51% of the snaps next year for the Steelers.
Yeah, which...
That turns into a fourth-rounder, but...
That doesn't seem very... If he's not going to be the starter, that doesn't look like that's going to really happen, though.
No, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but... You know, they needed to pick a direction, and they picked it. So, I mean, that's that's the encouraging thing to me. But
yes.
What they'll do with the rest of the picks, because Ryan Poles, as we know, likes to have, as he likes to call it, draft capital. And he doesn't have a lot of it right now because he's traded away a fourth-rounder. He's traded away a second-rounder last year. He traded away a third-rounder. So, I mean, he doesn't have many picks.
Well, like you said, at least what I like about it, they put a stake in the ground.
Yeah, and this will be a career changing type of draft for Ryan Poles.
Yeah, so yeah, it could be or a career ending one.
Correct.
Too.
That's what I mean. It's gonna go. It could go one way or the other. There's not gonna be much middle ground in this one.
No kidding. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. After the break, we will, of course, go to Dave Schwann. Are you ready with a far flunger?
I am, and it is very much in keeping with St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, very good.
A surprise, though. You'll be surprised at this.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing there, Davey?
Well, I'm doing very good. Very good. Then I'm going to forego any type of an Irish brogue because I can't do it.
But. The German Dave Schwann does not have a very good Irish brogue on him, does he?
I'm Irish today, though.
Everybody's Irish today.
Today we go to a rather well-known city, but for a very interesting reason. So get out your compasses and protractors.
Newfangled
devices because we are headed to St. Augustine, Florida.
Oh, I know somebody who lives there.
Do you?
Yes.
It's a wonderful place to visit and just all kinds of history. It may be the oldest settlement in the United States, actually founded by the Spanish in September of 1565.
Wow.
It goes back that far. But we mention St. Augustine today because records that were recently unearthed, when we say recently, we mean 2017, by a Dr. Michael Francis, who is a professor at the University of South Florida, discovered some documents that actually recorded St. Patrick's Day festivities in March of 1601. In what is now St. Augustine, Florida.
Wow.
He uncovered some documents that were logged in an expenditure of gunpowder by the Spanish who had settled the area and revealed that in March of 1601, St. Augustine's residents processed through the city streets in honor of an Irish saint who appears to have assumed a privileged place in St. Augustine.
Oh.
And that was to honor St. Patrick, or the Feast of San Patricio, in the year 1600. So St. Augustine, Florida, holds claim to one of, if not the very first, St. Patrick's Day parades. And, of course, we go into the 16 and 1700s in Boston and New York City, having St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston in 17-something, and 1763 in New York City. So
Wow. The
tradition of a St. Patrick's Day and a parade here in the United States goes back a long
way. Well, we are a country of immigrants, my friend.
Oh, and they point out in the document here about the St. Augustine parade that there was a multicultural event. People from France and Spain and some Irish people that had come over here were all involved with that. So you're absolutely right. And St. Augustine, Florida, some very nice weather today.
Is there water around? What's the temperature? Yes, get that.
It's 71. It's going to go up to 81. Is there water? Oh, you bet there is.
So when in that story, you were saying that they found these old records for gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
Did they happen to find any requisition for green dye?
die?
That I don't know. There's a very big body of water called the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, so they're right on the Atlantic?
They're right on the Atlantic.
Oh,
they're
okay.
In the eastern part of Florida.
Oh, okay.
And there is a huge, the Castillo de San Marcos is the big fort that's there. Those walls are just 6 feet thick. It's just amazing. That's right on the water, and it overlooks a beautiful, beautiful nice. View of the ocean and the city.
Well, it'd be good if it was emerald today, wouldn't it?
It would be good.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just looking out our window here at WGN from the studio.
Oh, the river is still
very
good.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I always, you know, I don't have any Irish heritage, so I'm not all that, that crazy about, you know, I don't go crazy about St. Patrick's Day. I certainly, you know, think it's great. If you're Irish, it's great to see the celebration. And every year, you know, they pull out the little boat, and I'm like, oh, are they going to do that again? But my gosh, when you see this, it is so impressive.
I know.
It really looks great. It might be a little hokey, but God, does it look cool when they're done.
And actually when they're doing it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget watching it the first time when right after I came to Chicago, 1982, the old studios for the old WCFL were in Marina City.
Oh, you're right there.
And you could look right out on the river, and somebody about 9:30 in the morning said, hey, come over here and look at this.
No kidding.
And that was really amazing to see that greenish color come up all
great.
Of a sudden.
Well, thank you, Dave. David
O'Shaughnessy.
You like Davey or David?
Davey is good.
Davey O'Shaughnessy today doing his far-flung forecast. And why don't you go right into the news, my good man?
I will.
Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards today. Or, as I said at the top of the show, Jim O'Tiran. Take that that O at the end of my name, stick it in the middle, because everybody's Irish. Joined today, as I said, by Davey O'Shaughnessy and Andy McMazer. So everybody in the green spirit today. Just want to give you a little overview as to what we have planned for today. Coming up right now, we're going to talk to Dr. Jeremy Silver in our regular Dean's Health segment. But also later in the show, we'll have Dean's regular theater segment. And also, we're going to talk about a little election news, because don't forget, even though the presidential primary has lost all of its steam, both candidates now have been officially elected, Donald Trump on the Republican side and President Biden on the Democratic side, but we still do have a primary here in Chicago, in Illinois, and certainly in the Cook County, Chicago area. So I thought we'd talk a little politics. That's on Tuesday this week, so hopefully you will still get out there and vote, even though the big race has been decided. And then later in the show, we'll have Mick Kaler. We'll do a little pop culture club, talking about some of the things going on in pop culture. So once again, I try to stuff as much as I can into the 4 hours, 3 pounds or even 4 pounds of bologna into a 1 pound bag as usual. So keep it here right where you're at, tuned at 720 AM and WGN. But right now I want to welcome to the show Dr. Jeremy Silver, the Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at Northwestern Medicine in Kishwaukee Hospital. Welcome to the show, Dr. Silver.
Jim, top of the morning to you. Happy St. Patrick's.
Top of the morning. Can I put an O in your name, too, or no?
Feel free, sir.
Oh, so it's Dr. Jeremy O'Silver. How you doing today, me lad?
Good. I'm doing just fine.
Well, you know, doctor, I thought it would be fitting. You work in the emergency room, in the emergency area of Kishwaukee Hospital, Northwestern Medicine. And so I would assume on St. Patrick's Day, is that emergency room a little busier than usual?
Yeah, it certainly can be. And typically we expect that, particularly as the day drags on. But I think it's fair to say that in most emergency departments, at least where I've worked, every day is St. Patty's Day to some degree.
That's probably true, right? Yeah. Well, you know, I thought it'd be fitting maybe to talk about this subject today. So maybe you can add a little insight. I would assume that many people, Dean, when he called in earlier, was saying that they did a remote earlier this week on the WGN Morning News. And at 5 a.m., people were already drinking green beer. So today is the day. Even though tomorrow's a work day, I would assume between yesterday and probably today, people will still be celebrating the green, if you will. So I was wondering, we always hear about hangovers, right? First of all, Is there really a medical term for a hangover?
There is, Jim, and the medical term is hangover from the Latin hangover.
Ah, see, that's why we have you on, Doctor, because, you know, I'm just a layman. But I love when you get so technical. That's what we love. When we, yes, when you really dig deep, you know, you really, you, we're delving deep now into. So a hangover is a hangover is a hangover, huh?
Yeah. Well, in the ER, we try to keep things simple just because the pace is so fast. But yes, it's a real thing.
And what is it? What is a hangover?
It's really a set of symptoms that occur as a consequence of overdoing it with the alcohol. And in some cases, in rare cases, some folks have a genetic condition where they just don't process it well, and one or two drinks can lead to a hangover, unfortunately. But those symptoms can include a variety of uncomfortable presentations, whether it's weakness, headache, vomiting, abdominal pain, the list goes on.
Ah, you make it sound so fun.
Well, when, you know, in the emergency room, we're seeing the worst of the worst. And so, you know, the hangovers that we see tend to be, you know, on that sort of outer limit of the curve of severe. But many folks nurse themselves back to health at home with pretty debilitating symptoms. So it can be miserable.
Well, here's the question, too. That's exactly, you led into my next question. So everybody, it seems, especially people that may, you know, partake in the alcohol binging kind of habit. Everybody seems to have their own homemade remedy. You hear about, oh, you know, hair of the dog. Wake up the next morning with a hangover. Drink what you had before. The hair of the dog. Or I hear so many different kind of homemade remedies. A lot of them deal with tomato juice, and it's almost like some weird concoction of whatever seems to be laying around the house that's liquid. You're supposed to drink that the next day. If I have a hangover to the symptoms that you were mentioning, what is there something, a common denominator or something from a homemade kind of remedy like that I should use to alleviate the real symptoms of a hangover?
Sure. Well, there is some legitimacy to the home hangover cure. Simply because if you think about the underlying cause of the symptoms, you can kind of break them down into their categories. So we know that when folks are drinking heavily, that sugar metabolism becomes disrupted and people's sugar drop. And so, you know, one of the first things that you do when you wake up with a hangover, as many of us have had, is you go out for breakfast and try to, you know, eat a big meal. And that's just, you know, pure biochemistry. You're replacing the sugar that was lost. In terms of drinking, yeah, there's a significant amount of dehydration that occurs with drinking. The alcohol acts on many parts of the body, but it does affect the brain, and it limits a chemical that helps you hold on to water. So there's a hormone called antidiuretic hormone, which, to put it simply, acts on the kidney to help you keep all the water in your body that you need. And alcohol blocks that, and so you pee a ton, as you think about the breaking of the seal, if you will. And so that's a real thing.
Is that a medical term, too, Doctor?
Yes. I only use medical terms on the show. But you can lose a significant amount of water that way. And so, you know, having a drink like Gatorade or some other electrolyte-rich drink helps replace the fluid that you lose. And of course, when you lose fluid in the urine, you're also losing electrolytes, and that can contribute to the way that people feel.
So actually, to your point then, Gatorade would be a very good, easy and quick kind of hangover remedy.
Yes, and I think many folks have found that sort of thing is very effective, or, you know, not to promote one brand, but any of the electrolyte pouches, you know, can be useful. There was the Japanese remedy with ginger, brown sugar, and tangerine.
Wow.
That was actually studied and found to be helpful. It's called KSF. I won't try and pronounce the whole name. And there's so many different remedies out there, but really the tie that binds them all together is you're replacing the sugar, the electrolytes, and the water.
And so, like, for instance, then, to your point about going out the next morning and having a big breakfast, so you would say that to go out and have, you know, some pancakes with maple syrup, or have some Belgian waffle with some whipped cream on the top. So you would say indulge in the sweetest kind of maybe lay off the Western omelet and go for the full stack.
Well, there's glucose, there's sugar in just about everything that we eat, but and certainly for diabetics, I would urge caution with the sugar.
That's true.
But yeah, in general, going out and eating just toast or eggs, pancakes, as you say, any of these breakfast foods are going to help. Number one, if you still have alcohol in your stomach, it's going to help absorb some of the alcohol and help with that. But number two, it's going to replace those the sugar and some of the electrolytes as well.
And nothing specific to a certain type of drinks. Like, for instance, if you had a hangover because you were drinking a lot of beer, once again, we're still talking about the sugar and the alcohol content is the same thing if you were doing some whiskey or bourbon or wine. It's just the fact of the alcohol is having an effect on the sugar in your system. So it's basically replacing the sugar. It's not really dependent like, oh, if you had if you were drinking beer all night, this would be better. Or if you were drinking wine all night or whiskey, it's really just the basics of the alcohol, correct?
Well, I am going to thread the needle on that a little bit, Jim. You bring up a really good point. So the reason that you feel so bad, you know, the headaches and the nausea in part is due to that loss of fluid and electrolytes, but there's also toxins in alcohol. Alcohol itself is a toxin to the gut, to the brain. It gets converted to acetaldehyde, which is a family member to formaldehyde, so you're essentially pickling yourself. On a small scale.
Wow.
And it can stimulate cytokine release in the body. Those are the chemicals that are associated with inflammation when people think about the catchword inflammation. And then there are these chemicals called congeners, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, which are produced in the production of alcohol. They become a part of the drink. And leading back to your point about the coloration of the alcohol, gin, vodka, and the clear-based alcohols are thought to contribute less to hangovers than the alcohols that have a coloration to them, like red wine, whiskey, brandy, etc.
Oh, that's interesting. So if you're out there partying today on St. Patrick's Day, you might want to go for a more clear alcohol than a colored alcohol. Huh.
It may help. And then again, that comes back to the production of congeners, which they just don't get produced in the same quantity in those clear alcohols.
So then, in other words, you're suggesting to drink straight moonshine than you would a bottle of a gallon of wine, huh?
Well, I'm not suggesting anything, but you can certainly, take the advice for what it's worth and maybe a couple of pennies.
Now, I want to also ask about hangovers. We've got a text here from 815, which is a good point. So many people, and I remember in my good old, in my 20s when I used to go out on a weekend, there was nothing better than after a little drinking session to go to a place here in the Chicago area on Central Avenue near Foster in Milwaukee. It was called King's Two Euros, and they were the greasiest, sloppiest gyros. They were the greatest things to eat at 2 a.m. in the morning. What is that about that aspect that seems to you have a yearning for really greasy food? Somebody mentions fast food, Taco Bell, the line around fast food places are always long around 2 a.m. Is there something there about greasy food as well?
Well, I'm not certain. Yeah, I did a little research on this because I was curious, and there's not a lot of evidence on the grease, but I actually think it may in fact be the salt, because greasy foods also tend to be salty, and you kind of crave that salt, which helps your body hang on to water. It's kind of a primitive reflex. But again, those types of foods, like you said, a gyro or a sub, submarine sandwich, pizza. The bread is going to help sop up some of the alcohol in your stomach and reduce the metabolism. So.
Boy, I'll tell you that I don't think King's Euros is there anymore. But my gosh, there's nothing tasted better at 2 a.m. than a sloppy King's Euro. Well, I'm talking to Dr. Jeremy Silver, or today Dr. Jeremy O. Silver, who is the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine Kishwaukee Hospital. After the break, I wanted to talk a little bit, if you can, about what's going on with this measles outbreak and some insights, and maybe you can, impart on some of our listeners the importance of vaccinations. I'm still baffled as to why we have become such an anti-vax culture here in the last several years. So stick around for that. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards on a St. Patrick's Day on a Sunday. I'm doing whatever I can to fill in for Dean as best as I can to serve you loyal, loyal Dean listeners. So just know that a lot of the usual things that you hear every week on a Dean show, I try to do those as well with a little touch of a little Elton Jim. So stay tuned. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN Radio, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen anyway. I'm on the phone here with Dr. Jeremy Silver, who is the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. And, doctor, I wanted to talk a little bit about this measles outbreak. We're seeing more and more cases of measles. We're finding some of these things now happening and with some of the migrants who have come here to Chicago. How serious is this measles outbreak? We're hearing of the numbers and they're, they're not in the hundreds yet, but there is a danger, isn't there?
Yeah, well, measles, is a very, very infectious virus that can cause very severe complications. And so we have a vaccine that's readily available and extremely effective. Two doses of the vaccine gives you like a 97% protection against the virus, meaning that only 3 out of 100 would get infected if they were exposed to it. So it's an extremely effective vaccine. And the complications are real. 1 in 1,000 kids that are infected will die. More will develop complications, which can include loss of hearing or brain damage. And the case fatality rate for pregnant women is as high as 10%. So there's a real risk. And there's an obvious cure that has been extremely effective. The worldwide number of people that had died worldwide from measles before the vaccine was in the millions, and that was slashed after the vaccine became widespread. So unfortunately, the vaccination rate in the population has dropped over the last couple of decades, and so now we're reaping the fruits of that labor, if you will.
Yeah, well, like I said, I just wanted you to mention some of those statistics because we have the capabilities to wipe these things out, and we don't seem to be using them. So I appreciate you sharing those facts with the people. That's Dr. Jeremy Silver. He's the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. Thank you so much for joining me today. Take it easy on your imbibing, but at the same time, you know how to handle a hangover, don't you?
Yeah, well, the best way to handle a hangover, Jim, is just don't go there. So I'm going to be teetotaling today, but I wish everybody a safe and happy St. Patty's, and the same to you. Thanks again for
Great.
Having me.
Thank you, Dr. Jeremy Silver from Kishwaukee Hospital, Northwestern Medicine. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. Stay tuned. No switching. Jim Toronto here at WGN, 720 a.m., filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but listen anyway. You say, Jim, why are you playing Boulevard of Broken Dreams? Well, what band is it by? Green Day. Hello. Happy Green Day. It's happy St. Patrick's Day here in Chicago. My gosh, looking out the window. It's amazing to see that green, green river. A little CCR for you. Yeah, my gosh, it looks so bright, so emerald-like. And, Dave O'Shaughnessy, Are you there?
Yes, I am.
You know what I find amazing? I'm looking to my back here, and it's amazing how the green almost stops at Lakeshore Drive.
Well, yeah. One reason why is because of the locks there as they go out to Lake Michigan.
Oh, so the water is completely stopped by the locks there?
By the locks, they would stop, and it eventually would flow out if the locks are opening and closing with boats. We're slowly but surely seeing boat traffic now with the, you know, spring coming in here on Tuesday.
Because there is like there's a little lagoon there. Right, yeah, where Navy Pier is.
Right.
And I could see just a tad of the green starting to flow underneath Lakeshore Drive. But earlier today, it's almost like it just stopped directly at Lakeshore Drive.
Maybe the lighting had something to do with it. You know what I think of, though, every time they do this year is the old soft drink, Green River.
Remember Green River? They still make that, I think.
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah, like I said, I was doing a little...
Hard to find, but you can get it.
I was doing a little Green River riff by CCR.
Green River.
Well, Dean must be already drunk because
is he on the phone?
No, he's not on the phone. More sabotage by Green Dean. I knew he was going to do this. But hey, you know what? We've got more than enough planned here. In fact, we can go right to Andy McMazer, who's also Irish today.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were talking earlier. I guess not so much a shock, but still, when it's official, it is shocking to hear that Justin Fields has officially been traded to the Steelers by the Bears.
Yeah, it's always the finality of the whole thing that kind of hits you at that point, because this has been talked about ever since Ryan Poles actually took over a couple of years ago, that this was not a quarterback that his regime drafted, and you know, Ryan Pace went up a couple of spots to get him, and it just never seemed to work out. Now, that doesn't mean that Justin Fields won't work out as a quarterback somewhere. It just, I don't know what it was. I think that there was a lot working against him here, unfortunately. I think that there was a couple of coaches that were as stubborn as the day is long and did not want to break what they were doing to make themselves look smart and available for head coaching jobs and sacrifice their quarterback. I mean, Luke Getsy last year and the year before, ridiculous, the play calling. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous to think that this kid could actually operate behind center, knowing that the plays that were being called were plays he couldn't run.
Well, the thing is, too, you know, I mean, there's no question. Justin Fields is a very, very good athlete. There's no question about that. And I think, to your point, I think he'd be a good quarterback if a system was built around him. But you have to remember, too, when you watch Patrick Mahomes, who, you know, obviously is the cream of the crop right now, you know, he scrambles. So people say, well, hey, you know, running quarterbacks are in now. Lamar Jackson, I mean, that's not... It's not like you have to be this Dan Marino pocket passer anymore. But at the same time, when you look at Patrick Mahomes, he scrambles. But when he scrambles, he's still looking to pass.
Yes, yeah, this is a passing league. I mean, Ed O'Bradovich will tell you that all day long and every Sunday that I've worked with him for the last 2 years.
Exactly.
He'll let you know that because, and you know, the odds are of Fields getting dinged up by continuing to run, you know, increase every time he takes off. Now, again, some of those are designed, and he had no choice. I think the biggest knock against him, though, was run first, pass second.
Exactly. And you know what? He used to check, you know, to, like what I said, use Mahomes as a thing. Mahomes, as I said, he'll run, but it's almost like a last resort. He still wants to throw that ball. I think that Fields always looked to pass because he was supposed to. But if those guys were not open at the exact minute he looked, he was ready to tuck that ball in. And to your point, he wasn't running to the sidelines.
No.
He was running up the gut in the middle of the field, and he was going to get hit. You are vulnerable. You're fair game. If you're a quarterback, if you're going to put your shoulder down, they can hit you.
You know, and in all fairness to Justin, too, the first 2 years, there was not a whole lot around him.
No,
they didn't really decide that they were going to go after a guy like DJ Moore or now Keenan Allen and DeAndre Swift, who they signed to be in the backfield. He didn't really have the weapons around him to have to do anything else other than run. I mean, he was the most valuable guy on the offense because his legs would win or lose you a ball game at times.
There was quite a love affair with Justin here, and it was interesting though. I mean, you know, record-wise, he was 11-29.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, far from stellar. I think Bear fans. There's two reasons why Bear fans we're embracing Justin. What's the nickname? QB1?
QB1.
Yeah, QB1. Two things, and I think it was mostly out of fear, out of Bear fans' fear. I think because he's talented, I think they feared, like you were saying, the coaching wasn't really helping him. Mm-hmm. They were afraid that if he went somewhere else, he was going to take someone else to a Super Bowl. Because maybe another coach in another system could harness his talent.
Well, yeah, it's a distinct possibility. I mean, listen, he's gonna probably back up Russell Wilson all of next year. Wilson's there on a 1-year deal. The Broncos are paying the most of his salary. They owe him like $38 million bucks. They made him go away for $38 million. The Steelers are only paying him like $1.5 million. So he's going to be the starter, and it's going to be a good opportunity because Russell Wilson kind of displayed the same traits that Justin Fields did early in his career. Russell Wilson was a scrambling running quarterback and had a good arm, but never was really able to show it and didn't really want to show it. He wanted to run. So I think Russell Wilson kind of evolved into a more of a pocket passer. Justin Fields is not a pocket passer right now, and that's just the skill set that can still develop. He's 25.
Right.
I mean, come on.
That's true.
He's not over the hill yet. No. And, you know, look, this, like I said, this was something that was set in motion a couple of years ago when Ryan Poles took over for the football criminal Ryan Pace, who should be in football jail for what he did to the Bears franchise.
Oh, my gosh. The first thing he did was fire. The first roster change he made was fire the greatest kicker the Bears ever had.
Yeah, it worked out real well.
And they're still trying to find a kicker. At least, well, now they've sort of got a little stabilized.
Santos is good.
But for years, that was one of their biggest liabilities. And that was the first move he made was to get rid of Robbie Gould.
There would never be a double doink if it was Robbie Gould was with the Bears in 2018. They're kicking against the Eagles.
No.
But revisionist history. So, but, you know, that's the fact. I mean, you don't draft a guy. It's very rare that you'll kind of, you know, bridge the gap between several regimes that come in. And that's a knock on the Bears. How many regimes have they had to have in the last 15 years? I mean,
it's the same script. And then the other side of the fear is not only the fear that Justin Fields may go somewhere else and succeed, but now the fear is, and the reality is, we are in a rebuilding phase again. So now we're another 2 or 3 years away. At the same time, you've got Detroit and Green Bay, who are legitimate contenders, and both franchises on the way up. The Bears could be out of this for the next 5 years, if not more.
Yeah, I think the Bears would disagree with that statement about being in the rebuild, because I think they're showing
with
now,
a new with a completely rookie quarterback.
Yeah,
though?
But I think that what happens here is you have the number one overall pick. That quarterback is expected to come in and start from day one and is talented enough to come in and start from day one. Now they've surrounded whoever's going to be the quarterback with a bunch of weapons. There's tons of weapons now. And they've upgraded the offensive line. They got rid of Cody Whitehair, and they've got rid of a couple of other guys and have signed veterans to take their place. So the offensive line shouldn't be an issue next year. I mean, obviously, on paper, we haven't played a game yet.
Yeah, but he's still a rookie, right? I mean, he's still a rookie. I mean, there is still an upgrade from college to pro, right?
I get that. But, you know, their talented wide receivers and talented running backs can really make up for a lot of mistakes that a rookie quarterback will make. And I think that as you go on learning, yeah, maybe they won't win next year, but, I mean, there's still a long runway for a kid that will come in from college and try to guide this franchise. Now, look, they have not had a franchise quarterback since Sid Luckman.
Well, you know, here's I'm so glad you said that, because now the Justin Fields era has ended, just like the eras of these former Bears quarterbacks.
All right, here we go.
Sit down. The Jack Kincannon era.
I love Jack Kincannon.
The Bobby Douglas era.
Talk about a running quarterback.
The Vince Evans era.
Strong arm, number 8.
The Ross Grossman era.
Rex Grossman.
I'm sorry.
He had an ego that is, it was writing checks that his body couldn't cash.
The Mike Tomczak era.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mike Tomczak.
The Mitch Trubisky era.
Yeah, that one is the first charge against Ryan Pace.
Right. Now, this one was probably before your time, but it was my time as a little young kid. The Gary Huff era.
Oh, I remember Gary Huff, number 19.
Yes. The Peter Tom Willis era.
Yeah, P.T. Willis was a good guy from Florida State.
The Kyle Orton.
Now, Orton, actually, I thought was a good quarterback for them. I mean,
how many Super Bowls?
Listen, if Lovie Smith hadn't been so stubborn to have to start Rex is our quarterback.
Rex is our quarterback.
Orton was a better quarterback than him all that year.
The Steve Fuller era.
Steve did nice. McMahon was always hurt.
The Doug Flutie era.
That was a big mistake.
The Cade McCowan era.
That was even a bigger mistake.
The Cordell Stewart era.
That was brief.
The Bob Avellini era.
He took him to two playoff games.
That's true. The Rusty Lish era.
Gone but not forgotten.
And the Jim Miller era.
Jim was a good quarterback, too. I mean, I thought that Jim and Shane Matthews did a nice job together there.
How many Super Bowls?
Listen, none, but they were serviceable.
Obviously, Andy's a sports guy. He knows many of those names. But if a lot of listeners were saying, who are these guys? My point is made.
You forgot about the Mark Butterfields and the Steve Stenstroms.
Oh, believe me. I went through a list. I was like, I could have gone on forever. The
Moses
Bears.
Moreno, Mike Glennon.
Yes.
Jonathan Quinn.
Oh. I mean, to your point, that's not even an exaggeration. Aside from Jim McMahon, who had a very short, era here, too.
It wasn't long.
Yeah. It really goes back to Sid Luckman, who I don't even know if anybody's alive who remembers Sid Luckman anymore. Yeah.
They had two quarterbacks in the last, several decades that had the ability and were the right people to try to lead this team to the glory land. And obviously, they spent a lot of money to get Jay Cutler. They gave up a lot, and they spent a lot of money on him. The attitude was the thing that got in his way. And really, Jim Harbaugh. I mean, Jim Harbaugh was actually a really good quarterback for what they had at that point.
Right.
And that division was there for the taking in those early days of the 90s and such. And that's a pretty bad record if you're thinking about two quarterbacks over the last three decades that legitimately had a shot to lead you to where you needed to go.
And I forgot to even mention Jay Cutler.
Yeah. So a lot of people like to forget that Jay Cutler.
I know. That's why I didn't put him in there, to be honest.
Yeah. That's definitely
Well,
true.
We will have time to discuss the Justin Fields era as well as the supposed Caleb Williams era when the draft takes place next month.
It's next month, and we'll have a Happen OB show to wrap that whole thing up on the Sunday following the draft, 3:00 in the afternoon, April 28th.
Oh,
and nice. It's funny. I got alerted to the whole trade last night from a text from Hamp.
Oh, nice. Very good.
So well, it was like, okay, well, this is legit.
Well,
if Hamp is telling me about this, this is good.
Because at first I just read something that said a source.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, well, thanks you, Andy McMazer. Yeah. And if we have a little time, I don't know if we have some time. We come back to the break. We can talk real quick about the Final Four.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, cool. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. But listen anyway, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning here at WGNRadio.com. Oh, no. What am I saying? WGN Radio 720 AM. If you listen to WGNRadio.com, you go there. I have a weekly podcast. That's a nice little inadvertent plug for my podcast. It's called Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. It's on the podcast section of the WGN.com website. So go in there, look for the prompt, and you'll find... almost 8 years worth of podcasts. I've been doing the podcast here for 8 years, over 400 episodes. So just go in there, go under podcasts, look for under Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you can just keep scrolling down and loading more. And I enjoy doing the podcast, and hopefully the folks that have been listening for many years enjoy it too. What I wanted to talk about really quickly with Andy, today is... it's March Madness. It's Selection Sunday, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Starts at 5:00. So Midwest-wise, who are we expecting to see?
Northwestern, for sure. Illinois, of course. Loyola kind of played itself out of any consideration after they lost in their first game in the Atlantic 10 tournament. So, I mean, they're not going to be in there. They'll probably get to the NIT if they decide to do so. They get the also and not the also runs, but Wisconsin will be there, I'm sure, now because they've made it to the championship game.
What about Marquette?
Marquette, definitely. Yeah, Marquette will be in there.
And Purdue is the number one seed, right?
Yeah, and they lost yesterday in overtime, but I think that they're still a lock to get in, obviously. That's not really going out on a big limb.
Exactly.
Drake from the Missouri Valley Conference, the automatic qualifier there in the Missouri Valley Conference. So, there's a lot of teams to kind of pique your interest here in the Midwest. Nebraska could get in there as well. They had a nice showing in the Big Ten this year under Fred Hoiberg, the former Bull.
Oh.
So, there'll be a lot of
seeing like the mentions of Indiana State as well.
They should be in. I don't think that they're going to get in.
Oh,
especially when qualifiers, you know, the top team in the conference doesn't win the conference tournament, somebody else sneaks in right. and grabs the automatic bid. Then the debate goes on about, okay, which of these conference champions regular season should be into the big dance based on power rankings. And they have this KenPom net rankings and strength of schedule and quad one wins and quad two wins. And they have this whole system that they go through. Now, Indiana State, to me, played a tough schedule during the year. They unfortunately lost in a great game to Drake in the championship game, but that shouldn't penalize the team for playing the way as well as they did during the regular season. But we'll see how it works out.
So have you made your brackets? Have you done that
No,
yet?
No, no. I'm going to wait until tonight and see how it comes out, and then I'm going to take part in our hoops challenge here on WGN Radio with we're trying to beat Lou Manfredini.
Oh yes, in fact, yeah. Let me mention that really quickly. You can take WGN Hoops Challenge sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. If you think, to your point, you just said you think you know better than Lou Manfredini, we'll register to play in our college basketball challenge at WGNRadio.com/hoops.
Yeah, and sign up is really easy. Go there down to the website; it's very self-explanatory. So don't let that scare you away. And Lou and we did a thing for House March Radio last year, a bracket challenge. Lou did not finish near the top. Let's just put it to you that way. So
your chances of winning are bad.
You should get in there with some confidence.
Yeah, because you have a shot of winning a $500 gift card to Second City Prime Steak and Seafood, courtesy of your local Chevy dealers. And you can fill out your you'll have until Thursday, March 21st at 10:45 to fill out your brackets and make your picks. And once again, that's at WGNRadio.com/hoops. And it's all sponsored by your local Chevy dealers at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Well, Andy, we'll see what happens with Final Fours, and we'll see what happens with the Bears. And big sports day for a Sunday.
Yeah, not bad. I'll take it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Andy McMazer, here on a... on a St. Patrick's Day, you're talking to Jim O'Toronto as well, filling in for Green Dean this Sunday. Stick with us after this break, or after the news, we will have our regular theater segment with Charles Askenizer, who is the founder and artistic director at the Invictus Theater. But right now, here's Dave Schwann. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. The sun is... kind of in and out. It was a little cloudy a little while ago. It was sunny when I got here earlier this morning. But the river right behind us here at the WGN Studios at 303 East Wacker, you look right over the Chicago River. And wow, it is a still. I mean, they did this, yesterday? And it still is a very stunning emerald green. So if you are still in the St. Patrick's Day mood, obviously people on the south side and on the northwest side are having parades today. But don't forget about coming downtown if you want to get a little bit of the green, because, my gosh, the Chicago River looks fantastic. In fact, I have a really cool idea. This is free. This is free content for you out there. If you want to make a really cool TikTok video, go to the Chicago River. Go buy a fish. First of all, buy a nice size fish, paint it green, put it on your fishing pole line, and then pretend you're catching a fish out of the Chicago River, and it'll be green. I guarantee you, you'll go viral. No question about it.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know.
It's time for Dean's regular segment on theater here in Chicago. And today my guest is Charles Askenizer, who is the founder and artistic director at Invictus Theater in Chicago, who this year are very excited because in about 9 days or so, 7 or 8 days, the local Joseph Jefferson Awards will be awarded, and plays that have been produced in 2023 have garnered 10 nominations for Invictus Theater, one of the brightest spots in the non-equity theater scene here in Chicago. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hi there, Jim. Thanks for having me.
So I should make a disclaimer, although I'm not I'm proud of the fact. I have worked with Charles over the last 2 years, and proud to say that both of the plays that I've worked on have both been nominated for Jeff Awards for Best Play. And in fact, we won last year with Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and we have been nominated again this year for The Crucible. And I have to say thank you to Charles for being a great director and bringing out the whatever is in my ability to act, because I've worked twice with Charles, and not only has he now been nominated twice and won last year as well and nominated this year, but I have been now nominated twice. Didn't win last year, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed to bring some hardware home on March 25th. So I can't say enough about how proud I am of doing the work that we've done together.
Yeah, I almost wanted to start the segment and say, "Hey, Bobby, it's been a while."
Right. Yeah, I joke that he's my Martin Scorsese. I'm his Robert De Niro, and he's my Martin Scorsese. I can only hope that we have as long and as successful collaboration as those two had. But what I want to talk about Invictus, it's really an interesting. The past year has been so interesting for the theater. We had this very successful sold out run of The Crucible, and then within weeks, tell the story of what happened.
Oh my goodness! Well, there was a fire. I got a call at 1 a.m. from our executive director saying, "Hey, the theater's filling up with smoke," and I raced on up Lakeshore Drive to get there, and the whole street was full of smoke. And you know, there was probably several fire trucks, several police squad cars there. And they let me stand across the street as I watched the building burn.
The actual theater that was on Thorndale near Broadway did not burn down, but there was smoke damage. And they basically had to go in and strip the place down to the studs, correct?
Yeah. It's been completely gutted by the landlord. The fire started in the cafe. I don't know where it actually started, but from what I've heard is it started in the cafe two doors down and then spread. And then there was a firewall that prevented it from spreading into our space proper. But we got lots of smoke damage and some other property damage as well. So
just then, you get done with this now Jeff recommended and now Jeff nominated run of The Crucible, the great Arthur Miller play. And then, so you're riding on a high, and then suddenly, how did you feel when did you get a chance to go in there and see the damage?
Oh, I mean, it was just surreal. I mean, it was another world. You know, I, like I said, I was standing across the street watching this whole fire take place, and you know, I was yelling at the firemen, "Please don't break down our door. I have a key. You can use it." I mean, their sole goal is put out the fire and save lives, and you know, they will destroy everything to do, and you know, rightfully so too.
Right.
But yeah, it was just a surreal feeling, and I remember not sleeping that night, and I had to teach class the next day, and I mean, I just sat in front of the burned out building for a good 12 hours. But I remember thinking something good is going to happen from this, or this is a time of change. A lot of times, you know, if we look in nature, fire is destructive, of course, but it also it creates a new way or new growth for things, or allows for new growth, and that's really what happened. Is it was. You know, we were on our back heels looking for a venue, and in Chicago, if you're not looking a year or a year and a half out, you're going to have a very hard time to find a venue to produce in. But we just got very lucky. One of our advisory board members happened to be walking past the old Windy City Playhouse space and said, "Hey, here's a contact." And the landlord, who's Amy Rubenstein, was very, very generous and very probably sympathetic to our cause, if I had to guess. And we told her about the fire, and she was very accommodating, and we actually were able to move into that space, and it's bigger and better and brighter than our last space, although I did love the Reginald Vaughn Theater. But we've been able to upgrade, and I knew something good was going to be coming from the fire.
The Windy City Playhouse opened up several years ago to great fanfare because the owners were looking to really build a very unique, a big unique space with a great lobby and a bar and a, and a great performance area and a backstage area and really to put on some big major kinds of productions for a storefront theater. And that's at, what, 3014 Irving Park Road, like around, what, Irving in Sacramento, Irving in Kedzie, around there?
Yeah, right in between those two. Yeah, Irving in Sacramento. 3014 West Irving Park Road. It's a really wonderful neighborhood, and I think that that community is really happy to have a theater back in there, because I think after COVID, I think, you know, with many theaters and arts entertainment venues, you know, they had a really hard time coming back. And I think, I'm guessing the same thing is true for the Windy City Playhouse, the theater company organization. And I think that building was just sitting there vacant for years. So
now, how ironic is it that, I mean, think about it now, if you had not found the space here at Windy City Playhouse, you most likely, to your point, because it's so hard to find a venue or a space, would you have had a 2024 season, do you think, for Invictus Theater?
Oh, you know, we're pretty full of grit. You know, we're pretty durable, and I think we would have figured out a way to do something. But I don't think we would have had the robust, incredible season that we've really lucked into in a lot of ways. I mean, Top Dog Underdog is one example. I applied for the licensing rights for that for a year and a half ago, and it was restricted at the time. It looked like somebody else was interested in doing it. And then, honestly, a month before we got into the space, Dramatis Play Service sent me an email saying, hey, the rights are available now. Do you want it? And I said, absolutely, yes.
And that's your current, and that Top Dog Underdog is your current production now, the Invictus production at the Windy City Playhouse. And it, too, has been Jeff recommended.
Yes, yeah. We've gotten some really great reviews. It's been Jeff recommended. It's just a really, really incredible artistic team that we have working on it. I'm just in awe. I tell people, like, if I have any talent whatsoever, it's my talent is surrounding myself with really, really talented, incredible artists, yourself included there, Bobby. And
thank you, Marty.
Aaron Reese Bozeman is directed the production for us, and he always just does a brilliant job, and he's very good at creating this safe, warm atmosphere for actors and artists to just thrive. And both of our leads, it's a two-hander show, Mikael Amin and Demoris Burrows are phenomenal. Mikael's a company member now with Invictus, and we're really proud to have him, and proud of the work that Demoris is doing too. And you know, our costumes by Markeisha Jordan are beautiful, and Brandon Wardell did the lights, which are stunning, and of course Kevin Rolfe's set is incredible, and Barbie Brown and Rachel Livingston both worked in tandem on our props. And you know, our incredible stage manager Rooney is I mean, they are a gem. You know, one of the best stage managers we've ever worked with, easily. And Petter doing our sound. There's one point in the show, for anybody who's interested in sound, where our actor actually opens the window. He does environmental sounds, and one of the actors opens a window, and the sound gets louder as he opens the window, and then it gets softer when he closes it. And so it's very, very in tune to how sound moves around the space. So Petter's brilliant as well too. I hope I didn't forget anybody, but if I did, just know that you are part of an incredible artistic team, and we value you very much. So
I'm talking to Charles Eskenizer, who is the founder and artistic director of Invictus Theater. After the break, we will talk about this or the current 2024 season for Invictus, which not only includes the current play that's playing through March 31st, Top Dog Underdog, which Charles just talked about, and we'll talk about how you can get tickets to that, but also some of the upcoming shows in the next several months from now until the end of the year. So stay tuned right here. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards at WGNRadio.com. Once again, I keep saying .com because I always say that on my podcast. WGN Radio, 720 AM. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning here at WGN Radio. And on my phones here today, I've got our Charles Askenizer for our theater segment, who is the founder and artistic director at Invictus Theater here in Chicago. Now at their new space at 3014 West Irving Park Road near Irving Park and Kedzie, Sacramento, in that area. In fact, I just drove past. I was driving down Irving Park yesterday and saw the theater. Looks like it's in nice shape. In fact, I was very, very impressed, Charles. I got stopped at a light about Ron Kedzie, and there was a poster for Top Dog Underdog in the bus shelter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't see any Crucible bus shelter things when I was, or any Virginia Woolf bus shelters.
Well, we didn't quite have the budget at that time. It was very important to us. Well, being in this new space, letting people know that we're here, and Todd, our executive director, who I'm sure is either listening to this or will listen to this, you just made his day hearing that. You saw that.
Yeah, I mean, I got stopped.
So excited about that bus shelter.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped and I looked to my right and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I know those guys. Well, in keeping of that, tell everyone about your new season. You got Top Dog Underdog playing right now through March 31st, and what's coming up for the rest of the year?
So Top Dog Underdog is going on right now, Susan Laurie Parks, and then after that, we're actually holding auditions soon for Tracy Letts' August Osage County, and then after that...
And when is that? Give us the dates. Give us the times. Give us the dates.
Oh, August Osage County, that is going up. So first week of June is when that's going to open, and then that runs through July 14th, and then... after that is Network, and don't ask me the dates, I don't have it off the top of my head. After that is Network, which is the Lee Hall adaptation and of the Patty Chayefsky screenplay. And then after that, we are finishing the season with our fall Shakespeare show of William Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Ah, very cool. So you're a big Shakespeare fan, Charles. So you always like to get a Shakespeare play in there somewhere. And ironically, Friday was your birthday. Here's a guy who's a big Shakespeare fan, and his birthday is on the Ides of March. Julius Caesar. Perfect.
Yeah. I was actually in a production of Caesar as well. And I think a long time ago, I was so excited that I think Chicago Shakes was doing a production of Julius Caesar. This is years ago. So I went to see it on my birthday, and it just felt right.
And I should mention, once again, on March 25th here in Chicago at the Park West, the Joseph Jefferson Awards will be awarded. And once again, congratulations not only for the Crucible production that I was in, but also for The Mountaintop. Invictus garnered 10 nominations for the Jeffs. Again, great. You got one. The Crucible got one. I got one. Mark Pracht and Michaela Voigt were also in the play. Who got one from The Mountaintop?
So Nyasia Ellison, she played the role of Camé. She got nominated for performer in a lead role, and then for The Mountaintop, also our projectionist DJ Douglas, he got nominated for The Mountaintop. He did these incredible, incredible projections at the end of that show, and then for Crucible, yourself, and you, as you said earlier in the segment, you are very talismanic, Jim. you're my lucky rabbit foot for the production.
Right. Yeah, two for two. We're batting 1,000 so far.
Yeah. So yourself, Mark, Michaela, the ensemble overall. I mean, I remember watching this show, and I was thinking, if I was the Jeff committee, I would have no idea how to parse out, you know, where to give the nominations, because I thought everyone was incredible. And then Kevin, once again, he got nominated for his set design, and he won last year for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Kevin Rolfs.
Yeah, Kevin Rolfs and Jesse Gowans. She got nominated for costumes for the Crucible. And of course, the production itself, and then myself as director. And I think I think that's everyone. Yeah, I hope I didn't miss anyone.
Eight nominations for The Crucible and two for Mountaintop. So congratulations. Invictus is on the rise, and I'm very excited about the new season. And I will see you on Saturday to audition.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to be in that space, just even to stand in there. It's a great space. It's a great place to see a show. It's a great place to hang out and socialize as well. So congratulations on your next chapter. Charles Askenizer of Invictus Theater. Tell us the phone number and website.
Website is www.invictustheaterco.com. So that's INVICTUSTHEATRECO.com. So www.invictustheaterco.com. If you type Invictus Theater into Google, we will pop up. We don't actually have a phone number
per se,
but the best way to contact us is through our website. We have an email link to our box office, and Steve, who is our box office manager, gets back to people very quickly. He is on top of it.
Very good. Thank you so much, Charles Askenizer of Invictus Theater. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. Jim Tirano with you here at WGN Radio, AM 720, filling in for Dean Richards. But listen anyway. In fact, if you miss Dean, if you love Dean, guess who's on my line?
And who doesn't really? Who doesn't miss Dean really?
Oh, you should see the text. My God, do they miss you? They've made that very clear to me.
Jim, I would like to share this with you. You know how IDOT put those messages up on the overpasses on the expressway?
Yeah.
I'm on the Dan Ryan right now about 95th Street. And I thought they're not supposed to have funny ones anymore. But it says, handcuffs are not a lucky charm. Drive sober. Get it?
Oh, my God.
Get it? Oh. Handcuffs are not a lucky charm. They are not magically delicious and otherwise.
Wow.
Thank you, IDOT.
Yes,
I can read some graffiti that's been sprayed on the walls, too, if you'd like.
Oh, yeah. Give us our late. Yeah, who's the coolest marker that you've seen so far? Who's our coolest tagger?
I'm not up on my gang insignias as much as I ought to be.
You know,
but there's quite a bit.
Well, you know, it's so funny. If you ever drive on the Eisenhower, you get off at Racine. There was during the summer, there was a Barbie little kind of pop-up store.
Yeah.
It was all pink. And it was right off the highway, and the day after it closed, it was completely graffitied.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
that's nice.
So where is Dan Ryan?
If you're on the Dan Ryan right now, just know that there is a van with WGN personnel, but also you are driving on the same highway right now as Bozo the Clown.
Wow.
Bozo was in our van.
Is he visible? Is he visible? Can people see him in a window? I hope you have him on the window.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've had a couple of people already blowing their horns and, you know, putting everyone's lives in danger, waving at the waving at the clown while we're... we've mostly been in a traffic jam, but...
So who's in the van with you?
So we've got Ray Cortopassi is in with us right now.
Ray O. Cortopassi.
Shotgun.
Yeah, he's in shotgun.
He's very Irish.
In the shotgun.
Very Irish.
Position. Yeah, you haven't worn out that thing with the names yet.
No, in fact, we have Andy McMazer. How about that?
I know. I've heard you say it about 25 times. I've heard. We have Alyssa Donovan, who is in the van with us this morning. Who did the weather?
Yes, I heard. I'm a big fan. Big fan. Big fan of Alyssa. You know, Brona gets a lot of the Irish, WGN TV attention, but I think it's only fair to say Alyssa Donovan is Irish, and she's as proud as anyone else.
She is. She is indeed. As I'd mentioned, Bozo is sitting right next to me in the van.
Watch your hands.
You want to say, give a little something.
Is it Jim?
It's Jim Tirano.
No, I don't want to.
Oh, very nice.
You asked me!
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Did you hear Bozo? Yes, is that Jim Tirano?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah, I know. Perfect. I mean, I got snubbed by Bozo, too. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Only because he doesn't have a phone to text it in the way everyone else is this morning.
So that's is that the whole lineup there?
But wait, no.
No.
That's the best. Well, the star of the show today, the one and only Rona Tone.
Of course.
In the van today. Jonah, would you like to say hello to Jim Toronto?
Jim?
It's Jim Toronto?
Yeah, here you go.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Brona. I love when you say ing words.
There's no importance on G's. They're overrated.
I think that in the script, sometimes they put ing words just so you could say them.
I write them just so I could say them.
They're beginning and they're looking and they're doing all the other stuff there. I love it. Are you
I'll try to emphasize that to you more.
Are you the Grand Marshal?
I am not. No, I'm just on the float with Bozo.
Everybody's on with Bozo.
He's the Grand Marshal of anything.
So now, are you and Alyssa duking it out for the most Irish girl on the float?
They want to know if we're going to duke it out for the most Irish girl on the float.
No, I'll lose.
We'll get back to you on that.
Okay, well, thank you. Keep it up, you two. You guys are among my favorites on the station, and have fun out there today.
No bother. Thanks very much. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Wearing the green, that's Brona, and there's Dean now. So, Dean, what are you wearing?
No, can you even do your stupid Lucky Charms leprechaun voice after hearing that?
No, that's Come legit. On. Now that's real. I mean, I got a nice deal. Irish bro going, but it's nothing like Brona for.
No,
for,
you are the Lucky Charms leprechaun.
For cry eye, I mean, you know.
Cry eye.
Please tell Alyssa Donovan she has the whitest teeth. They're beautiful. She has the whitest teeth.
Jim Toronto is creeping out a little bit. He says you have the whitest teeth ever, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Very nice. So what are you wearing, Dean?
I'm wearing, what am I wearing? What do you mean?
Do you have your
like an Oscars red carpet?
Yeah. What is your outfit telling us today, Dean?
Yeah, this is like an obscene phone call all of a sudden.
What story is your outfit telling us?
I have my same green sweatshirt that I've worn every year. So it's the only place I can wear it.
I hope you've washed it.
I have a nice green, very Kelly green sweatshirt. I've got the green fedora that I told you. That,
nice.
You know, that I can only wear one day a year. So, you know, we're all set.
Very
it's
good.
It's cold.
Yeah, you know what? This is all
sacrifice.
This is one of those days.
It's very, very cold outside.
Yeah, this is one of those perfect days, like when you were a little kid, when you went to school in the morning, you had to wear a heavy coat because it was cold. And then by noon or 1 o'clock, then it got to be 60. And then you were walking home with this giant coat because you wouldn't wear it because it was too warm. But it's right. Very cold
today.
It's
not going to be 60 this afternoon.
Is it cloudy out there?
It's a little cloudy. It's a little bit cloudy. Yeah. Sun's peeking through a little bit. Let me tell you, we've got a nimbus cloud
that's
right above the parade zone.
How are the isobars?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Well, Dean, so, and you're going to be out there.
How's the show going?
Oh, I think
it's
doing.
Am I going to have any listeners when I come back?
When you come back, they'll all come back. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I've had a lot. Like I said, the texts have been very interesting, as they usually are when you're not here.
How's Schwanny and Andy doing? Are they doing all right?
Yeah, in fact, you mean
he's got a lot on his plate with Justin Fields.
Yeah, right. We talked
There's a lot
about
to talk about today, Dean. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, Davey O'Shaughnessy is here. Davey O'Shaughnessy.
Hey there, Dean. Hey, Bozo.
Yeah, talking about beating a joke into the ground. What?
That's what I do. Yeah, so say hi to your crew, Dean.
I'll be back next week. Don't worry. What?
Say hi to your crew.
This is the only day that Schwanny really appreciates me is when I'm not there.
Yeah, he seems to stray away from the microphone.
As I say, I have a newsroom to run.
I did hear the far-flung forecast.
You did hear that? St. Augustine, Florida?
Yeah, it's even more exciting when you're listening at home.
Did you get your compass and protractor out?
I had both my compass and protractor, but I got to say, this is the first time that I ever heard the fartfling forecast while I was taking a shower.
Oh, nice.
that adds a whole new dimension to the whole thing.
The soap on the rope adds a whole different visual.
Yes. It did.
Well, I hope you're using Irish Spring. I hope you're using Irish Spring today.
Jim, let me just give you this update. We're just right outside Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus Parish.
Oh, where is that? You're going to 103rd and Western.
Also, no, it's 99th and Trooped, actually. You probably know it better as the location of Barker's Funeral Home and Cremation.
Yes, of course. One of my favorite cremation places.
It's a Southside landmark.
for all your cremation needs.
Yeah.
And where are you staging? That's a parade term.
We're staging, well, the parade begins at 103rd and Western and goes up to 115th Street. We're going to go right past my old house where I grew up at 109th and Artesian, and right past the county fair grocery store, my favorite grocery store, that provided us the shepherd's pie that we had for our big shepherd's pie eating contest on the TV morning show the other day.
You will literally pass your house?
I think they close on St. Patrick's Day because the street is shut down. Yes, I will be going by my old house.
I mean, literally, you will see your house.
We lived in a three flat then, and you can see the three flat from Western Avenue.
Wow.
Where much debauchery took place back in my sordid youth.
So is it kind of fun to go? Do you go back to the old neighborhood a lot or no?
Well, I do because I have I still have plenty of relatives in the neighborhood, so I do come back. But to go above the old house and to just to see it and imagine like all the crazy things that we did back in the day, it's fun.
So at noon, will you be on the float or is this our last? Report, do you think? Or you'd be too busy? Or will you?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, generally, the parade steps off at noon, but, generally they run a tiny bit late. So
yeah. Well, if you can.
Give me a call.
Okay. Because I want to make sure this time that Bozo doesn't blow me off.
I don't think Bozo has any interest in talking to you, to be honest.
Well, and so many don't. All right, Dino.
I'm not
100%
sure what this means, but he's giving me a finger gesture right now that I think says you're number one.
Thanks, Bose. All right, Dean. Green Dean. Green Dean Richards checking in en route to the Southside Irish Parade, the 46th annual, kicking off at 103rd and Western on the south side. 200,000 people are expected to attend. Wow. Chicago loves their St. Patrick's Day parades. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning, and we'll be here till 1 o'clock. So keep it tuned here. Up till now, no switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. I forgot to do this earlier in the show, as is my tradition when I fill in here. I always give the studio a nice little spray of my favorite air freshener. So I have christened the studio once again with my favorite Glade air freshener scent, which is, of course, the classic Cashmere Woods. Smells so, so good. After the news, we are going to talk a little bit about local and national politics. As I said earlier, the big race, the presidential race, has been decided now, but it's still no reason for you not to go vote. Get out there. We have Illinois primaries here on both sides, some major categories and major positions to be filled, both locally as well as countywide and statewide. So by all means, get out there and vote on Tuesday. Get that little cool sticker. I know Dave O'Shaughnessy always loves to wear his little I voted sticker, right, Dave?
Just be here next week in order to see it.
You will have your little sticker on. Very good, sir. Yeah, so we're going to talk a little about what's going on in media coverage and also how
journalism is being taught these days. So we're going to talk to a Northwestern professor who is teaching our journalists of the future. So that is going to be happening after the news. Also, I've got a couple of tickets here. I got a pair of tickets to see the Lyric Opera's newest production right now playing of Aida, Verdi's epic masterpiece of love, loyalty, and betrayal brought to life by more than 200 artists with an all-star cast and a breathtaking stage design. It's playing right now, as I said, through April 7th. You can get tickets at lyricopera.org. But right now, our fifth caller at 312. You know what? I don't even know the phone number anymore. 312-981-7200 is the call. So caller number five at 312-981-7200 gets a pair of tickets to see Verdi's classic Aida. And, of course, Elton John did a musical based on Verdi's Aida, which wound up winning him his Tony. He recently got the EGOT, which is the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony. And his Tony was for the musical score that he wrote for the stage musical based on Aida. But that is at the Lyric Opera right now. Pair of tickets, fifth caller, 312-981-7200. And we'll talk to you after the news with Dave Schwann. Hey, Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning here at WGN 720 AM. And I want to remind you, while you're out there reveling and partying to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, is don't forget, on Tuesday, March 19th, you have to get out on those same streets, but this time you have to do your civic duty and get out there and vote. As I said earlier, you know, the big race has been already decided for president, so that might cut down some people's enthusiasm to go out there and vote. But at the same time, there's a lot of statewide and local races that still need your input, democracy in action. And as I said before, Dave Schwann loves to get out there and get that little I voted sticker, as so many people do these days. Everybody, when they get it, they put it up on on Facebook and Instagram, social media. Oh, look at I voted. So I think that's why they give those things out, just to get people to get some ways to get people to vote. So I want to remind people about that, and also talk a little bit about the upcoming campaign. But in general, or a little more specifically, I mean, I'd like to talk about how our politics and our elections are being covered these days by the media. And so I'm in the studio right now is Craig Duff, who is a professor of journalism at the Medill School at Northwestern University. And Craig actually teaches our journalists of the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So first, what I wanted to ask you, you have been a journalist. You've worked at CNN. You've worked at Time Magazine. Now you're a professor at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. As you observe the way the media in general, with now the media in the last 20 years has completely transformed, at least I think it has, mm-hmm. with social media especially and all these other different platforms and all these different options that people have. Have you seen a change in how when your students come in, mm-hmm. You have undergrad and master's.
I lead the video and broadcast specialization in our master's program in this very building, a couple floors down. And then I'm also I teach at the main campus in Evanston.
So what are young kids coming in with as a view of the media that might be different than the way you were trained when you came up?
Well, when I was trained, and when I was coming up, there were only three networks. I mean, CNN had started and all this stuff. And actually, my first job out of I have a master's in film from UT Austin, and I got recruited to go to CNN. So the landscape was very different back then. And I've seen over my career from those early days of sort of cable television and then the advent of other cable channels coming along, the news changing, and then this creation of, you know, reality TV, which kind of bumped all the documentaries I used to do out of the way, and then digital stuff, and watching that evolution from the beginnings of the internet in the late 90s to now, it really has taken over. And the key thing about that is that especially when it comes to politics, politicians and others can basically speak directly to their people in ways that they don't need the media to be there as much for them. So, like, you can have direct lines to your voters and to your constituents and to your party, you know, members and stuff like that through social media, and that's good. You know, it's democratizing in a lot of ways, but also has, you know, some challenges for democracy and things like that when you're channeling only, you know, this one message to people.
And that's what you teach, right? Yeah, you teach online. So what? So what is the curriculum that you teach?
Well, I do a couple different things. One class I just taught was a social media video class, where we're making everything from Vox explainers and Instagram type things to TikToks, but really studying it, trying to understand how that works, and one thing that's being shown is that more and more people are getting their news from TikTok and places like that, and young people are using it as a search engine instead of going to Google. They're trying to find things on TikTok that inform them. So that means that we as journalists need to be there, and actually need to be there and presenting good information. And that's really changed a lot over, in fact, the class that I've taught that class for 6 years or so, started off being mostly about Facebook.
Right.
And then it was about Instagram.
Right.
And,
MySpace, you went through.
Yeah, right. Not quite that far back.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, like Friendster, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's, and now it's become, it's shifting every single time, which is exciting and also annoying, and that I have to reinvent the class every time I teach it. But what I see in the young people there is they're engaged and smart and really interested in doing good in and helping sort of people understand the world around them, and they come very eager to try to be that. I think they're also just a little concerned about what's happening with the industry and all the things that are the speed of change and all that stuff in terms of what kind of career they're going to have. But a lot of our broadcast students are interested in local TV, which is still going strong, and our students get great jobs out there in local television news.
See, now what scares me, because once again, I started my career as a print journalist, and in fact, one of my first jobs out of school was working for the Old City News Bureau, which now is defunct, but it used to be a news service that supplied stories for the newspapers and the radio and television, and it was a hard news kind of place. And this was back in the mid-80s. And so this was still, I was with some crusty veterans.
Right.
There was a guy named Paul Zimbrakis, who was the head of city, the newsroom back then. And this guy, was in that old kind of view of, three sources before you even tell me the story.
Right.
Type of verifying and things like that. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of concerning to me when you just said was that young people are going to TikTok for their news, which has no journalistic kind of processes or ethic or any kind of journalistic foundation.
Yeah.
Well, that's where people, isn't that scary?
It's scary. It's also an opportunity, and it's a necessity that we be there doing good journalism on that platform. There's not a great deal of financial incentive. You're not going to make any money. You can't can't even link back to your stories on TikTok. But in terms of building an audience, being there and telling good information that's been thoroughly vetted and fact-checked and presented in a way that helps people understand the world, that's really important for us to be there. So I love the fact that the Washington Post has been an innovator in that space, doing lots of kind of crazy things, but also a lot of really good information. New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all those folks are in there trying to give good information in there. But yeah, you're right. It is also kind of random. The algorithm drives things in ways that you don't have much control over as a content creator. So it's a lot to sort of think about and to worry and also be excited about.
Would you say then that there is journalism? I mean, is journalism still alive?
Absolutely. Journalism is the foundation by which we have all these conversations. You know, all the things that people talk about out there on social media, someone reported on it somewhere. There is a story that somewhere that they're quoting, and everyone kind of does their take on it. But there are people out there doing really, really good reporting that feeds into the sort of information conversation out there. Now, there's also a lot of folks just spouting a lot of opinion.
My point on social media. I mean, there's no filters, there's no buffers, attribution.
And it's a big challenge.
You know what? Two of my favorite movies about journalism are All the President's Men and Broadcast News.
Yeah, amazing films.
Yeah. And I just saw Broadcast News on television a couple of weeks ago. And there's a great scene where William Hurt, who plays this kind of good-looking anchor who doesn't really have any journalist chops, and he's kind of looked down at the network because he got this job because he's good-looking and he can read, not because he knows what he's doing. And he's thrown into this very tense reporting about a downing of an
F-14
plane. And in the midst of him reporting, he makes a subjective kind of comment, mm-hmm. like we hope something, blah blah yeah. blah, and they cut to the news director in the booth, and he says, "Who the hell cares what you think?"
Right.
And it was chilling
yeah.
because in today's journalism,
right.
even on the street reporters.
Yeah.
They bring in their own subjective, you know, amidst the facts, they seem to yeah. also have some little, you know, subjective commentary and opinion, which seems so different than
right.
those hard and fast kind of objective rules that were striven for. They didn't always happen,
right,
but at least they were strived for.
Yeah, we never really had objectivity.
We're right.
trying to be as fair as
we're human
to the stories.
Right? Yeah.
I think the opinion stuff really came about when cable news started having reporters on air as sort of discussions and all the people in the
panels.
Like
right.
The panels
yeah.
and all that stuff, which is cheaper to do than doing, you know, field reporting and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, when I was at CNN, there was a central desk where, you know, all the news packages were shared and whereas, you know, then it became more of an anchor model in the late 90s, and then became a little more, you know, a little glossy, you know, back when in the day the news was a star at CNN. But what's happened is that these people, like, you know, New York Times reporters or whatever, are put in a place where they're asked to offer analysis, and it's really hard to find that line where you're not actually going over and saying something that's subjective or your own opinion when you're talking about you know, different news issues. But if you're covering a candidate and you see them every day and you understand kind of how they think and how they work, you know, you're going to start looking at them in a way that you have an opinion about how they operate, and that's legit as a reporter to say what you've learned and how you kind of see this person. So when Maggie Haberman talks about
right.
Trump, you
right,
know,
yeah.
she
you
comes
know.
With many many years
yes,
of
watching
of coverage of this guy and
yeah.
watching kind of what's been happening.
Yeah. I'm talking to Craig Duff, who is a professor. What is your official? What do you actually teach? Like, what is your main?
I teach generally video journalism, and that can be documentary, which I'll be teaching this next quarter, mm-hmm. or broadcast journalism and social media and things like that.
Yeah, professor of journalism at the Medill School at Northwestern University. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Midwest and even Chicago, and I say the Midwest because the Republican convention is going to be in Milwaukee
yeah.
in July,
right.
and then the Democratic convention is going to be in Chicago in August. So, I mean, within 90 miles here, Chicago, 90 miles away, is going to pretty much be ground zero for presidential politics,
right.
in many ways, world politics,
yeah.
for a good month.
Get used to it.
Yeah, so I want to give people a little preview of that, and also just talk about, as a media expert and longtime veteran, how you see the coverage in today's world, as you would maybe compare it to how presidential candidates and elections were covered, say, 20, and this things are moving so fast, 10 years ago.
Right.
You know. So I'm talking to Craig Duff here from Northwestern. We'll be back after this. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning on St. Patrick's Day. Nice, partly sunny, partly cloudy day. Still a good day for a parade on the south side where Dean Richards is right now. In fact, probably getting ready to step off on the WGN float in about 10 or 15 minutes on the south side, 103rd and Western. I'm in the studio right now with Craig Duff, who is a professor of journalism at the Medill School at Northwestern University. We're talking about journalism and politics because this Tuesday, don't forget, is the Illinois primary. So get out there and vote. And as I said before the break, this summer, if you're not aware of it, folks, in about 3 or 4 months, we are going to be ground zero for politics. We've got a Democratic convention here in Chicago and the Republican convention in Milwaukee. So I wanted to ask Craig, how are you as someone who is teaching our next generation of journalists, as well as somebody who has to have their finger on the pulse of journalism and media and where it is, what do you see in terms of the coverage of how presidential candidates are covered today as perhaps they were maybe in the pre-internet, pre-social
right.
Media, you know, say 40, even 50 years ago?
Yeah, I wasn't covering them 40 or 50 years ago. In 2004, I did a documentary for the New York Times and Discovery Channel called Politics and the Media, and we followed how the media covers the races. So we were on the Kerry campaign and looking at George W. Bush's campaigns, and so we were actually on the on the plane with John Kerry, following him for a day or two as part of this, and paying a lot of money, actually. I remember it was costing about $25,000 to have a reporter on those, those, because you had charter flights and things like that. So it's a big commitment for news organizations. And that, at the time, it was still a bit of like sort of kabuki theater. You had the rules were there. The candidate would speak. You would have, you know, sort of chat up with the press a little bit on the plane, maybe, you know, there'd be a connection between the reporters who were covering them and all that stuff. And so there is this, and that still exists to some extent for the national races and things like that. Local journalists, local politicians will know their local reporters, both in TV and radio and in print and digital. So, you know, there is a, there's that sort of connection, but then there's what has changed. And I covered also the convention in the both conventions in 2008, Democratic and Republican. That's the year that Sarah Palin emerged in St. Paul and all that stuff.
McClain,
and then I was in 2012. That was with Time magazine. In 2012, I was with the New York Times covering the Republican and Democratic conventions that year too. And really, what changed there is the fact that I was there doing digital video, and not like for the big channels. I was with a small camera shooting stuff, so it was, it meant that there was more coverage that was kind of like more nimble and different and all that stuff. And then I was in Cleveland in 2016 to see, but I wasn't really inside the convention hall. I was shooting another film there, the Republican convention there, and there there was more, there you have more, even more of people like doing the kind of the influencer kind of folks, the content creators who are out there. And that's really what's emerged over the last,
is this, you know, influencer and this more kind of, like you said, TikTok kind of much less, you know, formal.
Yeah. You know, there's the idea of like earned media where you're, you know, you go out and you try to convince the press, the major press, to cover your candidate. And then there's paid media, which we'll be seeing pretty soon here on our local television. All the races happen every 2 years. You know, we pay the bills for the local TV stations.
So there's one thing that's been happening of late that I'd love to get your take on. So I find it interesting. Your political alliances aside, from a strictly journalistic point of view, I find it interesting over the last several months, especially since the Iowa caucus, and then when Trump also, you know, won on Super Tuesday, that MSNBC has chosen not to broadcast, his Trump's victory speeches, and Rachel Maddow, who's pretty much the face of MSNBC, said, you know, it's a very difficult decision, but we just, it's all lies, and we'll let you know if he says something newsworthy. And that just sent a chill up my journalistic back, because it felt to me like, you know, they're blaming Trump for being a threat to democracy, and at the same time they're not being democratic. They're gonna decide what we hear. Well, who is NBC? Isn't that what they do in China?
Well, MSNBC. Well, China, the government would tell you.
Well, I understand that, but I'm still talking about censorship. Right. You know, we'll tell you what you should know. Well, I get the sense of very paternalistic.
Yeah, but Jim, you know, journalists are out there trying to find the sort of, they go out and they comb everything, they read everything, they try to figure out, listen to all the stuff that they can, and then they come back and report. So you can't report if you're playing basically live rallies all the time. You're not really doing your reporting. You're just showing and letting this person talk without any kind of conversation about what they're saying until after. So Fox News doesn't play Biden's rallies completely, you know. So and MSNBC didn't play Trump, and you know, CNN in 2016 played Trump all the time and saw their ratings, you know, shoot up. But then a big conversation, like, is that really our responsibility as a news organization to just unfiltered allow candidates to go there?
But if they are the presidential candidates, these are the people that we do have to choose from now, who are going to be the next leaders of the free world. And whether we like what they're saying or not, somebody does, and maybe it gives me a chance to either like that person or dislike that person. But it struck me that we'll let you know. We'll go to the speech if he says something of interest or if he says something newsworthy. And I was like, wow.
Well, you know, that's what the front page is for your local newspapers, to tell you what the most important pieces are that you should know this, you know, today.
Yeah, we've always had editors. Right, yeah. I get
absolutely
that.
Right, yeah. But now, interesting, what you're talking about, there used to be something called the equal time rule, where broadcast entities, radio and TV, used to have, if you had a candidate on, you'd have to have the other candidate on for an equal amount of time.
Right.
And then there was the fairness doctrine, which is any kind of thing that you would discuss, you'd have to have many points of view. Now, that went away. That was in the late 40s that came about, the FCC, because they didn't want the networks to sort of have so much power. That went away in the Reagan administration when they said, we now have this bigger marketplace of ideas. We have cable. We don't need this fairness doctrine. So,
well, it seems like we, to your point, it seems like we're, the rules are being created sort of as the media and society keeps changing so fast.
Yeah. A lot of ways we're building the airplane as we fly it.
Exactly. Which I don't know is good all the time. Ask Boeing.
Keep it flying.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank Craig Duff, who's a professor of journalism at the Bedell School at Northwestern, for sharing your insights on the media and stuff. And get out there and vote, Craig.
I already have.
Very good.
Yeah.
Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards. Keep it tuned. No switching. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards this morning, and now it's this afternoon. We'll be here till about 1 o'clock. Dean is busy getting ready to kick off. I'm sure they've just begun, probably, or getting ready to, as part of the WGN float, WGN TV float. At the Southside Irish Parade, 46th annual at 103rd and Western. Going to be going through the Beverly and Morgan Park neighborhoods in the South Side of Chicago. Dean is from the South Side, so he's happy to be there. He's been very busy, so he was going to maybe try to call in here, but we were trying to get in touch with him, but he's not available. So if we can get him, we can. If not, have fun out there, Dean, with your green fedora. I am playing this song. Why? Because it's Green Day. Duh. One of the things I wanted to just mention, it's been a while since I've been on, and something really big in Chicago, not only in the culture of Chicago, but obviously in the broadcasting world, Tom Skilling has retired, and retired on February 28th after 45 years. At WGN, and I got a chance to know and work with Tom, and I just wanted to give my own kind of mini tribute and kind of farewell to Tom, because he really was such a nice guy to me when we worked together, and I got to know him socially. Not a lot. I'm not going to pretend we were best friends, but we did get together in person a few times over the years, and he always would return my email messages and was always very complimentary of my work, and always very encouraging. Always said good things, and I have to say that it is already kind of strange and odd to watch the news and get ready for, you know, Tom's forecast. Tom at 10, he really elevated the entire TV weather broadcast. Weather has always been a major part of a newscast, especially here in Chicago, where weather plays a major role in our lives, especially in winter. But in the summer, too, we get really cold and snowy winters, as we all know. And then we get really hot and sometimes treacherous summers with high humidity that in the past have even killed people. So weather is certainly a major, major story. But I have to say that, you know, what was so great about Tom's tenure at WGN television was he was exactly what you saw. Being someone who got a chance to know and work with him, and some of you may remember, it's been a while now, but I was a part of the Gary Myers show here in the afternoons from 2009 to 2014, and Tom used to be on that show every afternoon, and it was a high point of the show, and so often we wouldn't even get to his weather forecast. It was almost, oh, by the way, do the weather while you're here, Tom, because we would start to talk about so many subjects and get off on tangents, and Tom would bring in his own experiences and his own kind of unique perspective on things. And he and Gary were longtime friends, and from the media, and then social friends. And as I said, that's how I got to know him. And I have to say, and I think Tom even acknowledges this, but I really believe that Tom Skilling was the main meteorologist at WGN, got here in the late 70s. And if you watched the WGN news, you had to be taken by his knowledge and his passion. And he would start to talk about these weather terms that we never heard before. In many ways, Tom Skilling was a teacher. He was teaching us and sharing his passion with us, like every good teacher does. And as I said before, he elevated the entire kind of weather broadcast. But at the same time, he was a very smart broadcaster. And I say this because Stephen Gary, if people remember, Stephen Gary used to make fun of him in a respectful way, though. They used to call him Tommy Skillethead. And they would talk about, oh my gosh, this guy on Channel 9, he's off the charts in terms of his knowledge and his enthusiasm for weather. And they started to joke about it. And it got a younger crowd to start to watch that because we wanted to find out what Stephen Gary were talking about. And so we started to watch Channel 9 News to see Tommy Skillethead, who, of course, was Tom Skilling. And instead of getting angry at that, instead of rebelling against it, instead of creating a feud, Tom was not only was he an excellent and probably the best TV meteorologist in terms of accuracy as well as his commitment and passion and knowledge, but he was a savvy broadcaster. And he realized, rather than rebelling against that, to go with it. To embrace it, because it's bringing more people into the tent. It's bringing more viewers. It's bringing him more visibility. And I really believe that Stephen Gary pointing Tom Skilling out and in many ways introducing him to a different generation, and then Tom Skilling wisely embracing that, really helped Tom go to another level and become Chicago's weather person. We've always had very popular weather people here. There was John Coleman at Channel 7 in the heyday with Fahey Flynn and Joel Daly. There was John Coughlin on the Channel 2 News back in the heyday of Walter Jacobson and Bill Curtis. Harry Volkman was at many stations here, also at Channel 9 at the end of his career. But Tom really became the gold standard. And as I said, what was so great about him was that, I believe me, because I saw him in social situations when the mic and the camera wasn't on, and that same genuineness that he exuded during his TV forecasts and his TV segments, which grew to be 20 minutes sometimes because he was so popular, was really Tom Skilling. That wasn't an act. That was the guy. And when you see somebody have that much of an impact and that much of a successful career, especially in a very competitive kind of business like television news and certainly the weather broadcasting business, I just have to say that it's been a pleasure working with Tom for 5 years. He used to call me Elton, which was, I got a kick, even before the listeners did. Hey, Elton. I love talking to Tom. There was a great one show when we were at the old Showcase Studios here at Channel WGN when we were on Michigan Avenue in the Showcase Studio. Tom actually did his nightly forecast, like his 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock news forecast from our studio during our show. He did it live from the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, went outside and did it live. And I actually brought a couple of my own suit jackets, sport jackets, for him and Gary to wear. And that's, I think it's on YouTube, but Tom wore this leopard jacket that I wore when I was the big bopper in the play, Buddy. And it was so great to see Tom wearing this big leopard jacket. He was game for anything. He got the joke. And that's what was so great about Tom. And he was self-deprecating, and he got the joke, and he knew sometimes the joke was on him, and he didn't mind. And that is the sign of somebody who has a lot of confidence in themselves. And so I had the utmost respect for Tom Skilling as not only a broadcaster, but it was great to be someone I could call him friend. And so I just want to say to Tom, wherever you are, whether it's in Hawaii, whether it's in Chicago, wherever you may be, job well done. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you this afternoon now. Been here since 9 o'clock filling in for Dean Richards. WGN Radio, 720 AM. And that song can only mean one thing. We're going to go and talk a little pop culture in the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Hey, Mick.
Ben.
How's it going?
Really good. Good to be back with you, pal.
Yeah, it's been a while. So yeah. We'll talk a little bit here, and then after the news, we'll come back and talk a little more. So don't worry about that.
Gotcha.
Just wanted we were supposed to Dean. You know, I know he's busy at the parade. He was supposed to call in a little earlier. But I assume he's celebrating. He's probably float side. Is that the word?
Not curbside. It'd be roadside.
A lot of the people might be curbside after the parade.
Yeah, that's true. That's a big deal down there, the Southside Irish Parade. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, they said maybe 200,000 people.
Yeah, it's a big deal. That's a big lot of fun down there.
I don't even think that many people were at the one on Columbus Drive downtown yesterday.
Yeah, well, between that and then also the people that just want to be by the river yesterday, too. So
yeah. So, well, I want to talk to a few different little topics here today on the Pop Culture Club. And I didn't even mention this one to you, but it struck me. And so I'm going to just do this to you and get your top of the head kind of reactions. All right.
Yeah.
What is it with all these new Ghostbusters movies now? Bill Murray wouldn't make a Ghostbuster movie for 40 years.
Right.
Now he can't stop making them.
It's a franchise now, and you're right. It's 40 years ago this summer that the first movie came out. And I know this is an unpopular statement, Jim. It was an okay movie. It wasn't great.
The song was, I thought the
Kane. It wasn't Godfather, okay?
The song was better than the movie.
Well, they had the song, that Ray Parker Jr. ripped off the melody from Huey Lewis and he had to pay up there. You had the logo with the little, the ghost and the red circle and the slash. And you had the outfits, that people wanted to wear for, Halloween and stuff. And like two-thirds of the way the movie was good. And as soon as they got into all that tech stuff of killing the giant ghost.
Oh, when that marshmallow guy.
Yeah, the Stay Puft Marshmallow.
Yeah,
man, yeah.
I tuned out.
Yeah. And then, okay, let's go after that. Okay, Ghostbusters 2 died a dog's death.
Yeah.
Nobody really cared about the female Ghostbusters thing, a bunch of women dressed up doing the same thing. And in all respect to them, it just wasn't a big deal. And there was also, don't forget, the Ghostbusters cartoon show.
Which was huge, and that was, and this is my point about, they missed their window. They had, there was a great demand for people our age who were around when the first Ghostbusters came out. Whether it was a good, great movie or not, it was a phenomenon. It was a huge,
very popular
movie. And so we still remembered it, and everybody from our generations loves Bill Murray, and Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. So there was great, great demand. And like you said, Ghostbusters 2 didn't really cut it. And then, The cartoon came out, and the toys, I have a godson, Patrick, who's now, scary to think, he's 38 years old, but he loved the Ghostbusters toys, so you did have another generation.
Sure, of marketing, yeah.
And yet, Bill Murray would never make that movie, and now they've made two with Bill Murray with it in the last, three or four years?
Right. In fact, he was just on the Tonight Show. I think it was on Friday night, and they got some of the other stars doing other shows because the movie comes out next Friday, and they want to, have a big splash and a big send-off for it.
But do you care? I mean, isn't it? And to me, I don't think a Ghostbusters movie now with Harold Ramis sadly passed away, and everybody is gray and tired. Why didn't you make this movie in 1993?
Right. Well, I think at that time, Bill Murray and some of the other stars were like, well, we've got other things we want to do. Harold Ramis directed. He obviously, did Groundhog Day, and Bill Murray wanted to do his movies, too. And I think they just wanted to move on. But in retrospect, like you said, it's like, wait a minute, why didn't we catch that wave when it was really hot?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Murray could have still made Lost in Translation, and Harold Ramis and Bill Murray could have still made Groundhog Day. But you had a demand for that movie.
Right.
And then you let it slip, and Bill Murray seemed, people couldn't even get in touch with Bill Murray. He didn't even have a phone number. And they said that the script was always sitting around laying somewhere. And now, when they're in their 70s and they're like, they want a big payday, now we've got a Ghostbusters film. And as I said, I don't know if there's the same kind of excitement for it, because it seems to me that the time has passed.
Yeah, I think so, too. It'll be interesting to see what the reviews are like. I haven't seen many previews for it or trailers. I've just seen the stars on different shows talking about it.
Which is scary, because usually if they don't show you a trailer, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll see. But yeah, you're right. Like I said, they did miss that opportunity. And I think keep in mind, 40 years ago, these guys were so much younger that they wanted to do other things. And like, well, I don't want to just be known as the Ghostbuster guy. Now, the one thing I will say about this, Ernie Hudson's got work again. So that's
right, exactly. He's been really, I mean, Bill Murray and the other guys, they've got money from, but Ernie, Ernie's probably like, hey, where were you guys for the last 40 years when I needed you?
Yeah, he's been sitting by the phone going, okay, anytime that thing wants to ring is okay with me.
Yeah, Ernie was saying, when you're going to call.
Yeah, exactly. Not who you're going to call, right?
Exactly. I'm talking to Mick Kaler here in the Pop Culture Club. After the news with Dave O'Shaughnessy, we will continue our discussion, talking a little bit about the passing of Richard Lewis, one of my favorite comedians. And also, we got to talk about the In Memoriam segment on the Oscars last week.
Oh, yeah.
What
absolutely.
The heck was that?
Total mess.
Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after the news with Dave Schwann. Jim Tirano with you here. I want to be with you. I have been with you since 9 o'clock. We're in the final stretch here. Be done at 1 o'clock after filling in for Dean Richards since 9 a.m. Then we'll be passing it off to Steve Dale at 1. He's got a short show because at 2 o'clock, Illinois will be playing Wisconsin right here at WGN. 7:20 a.m. I got Mick Kaler on the line. We're talking pop culture. What a sad thing about Eric Carmen passing away, Mick.
Raspberry singer and solo artist, too, and a great pop songwriter.
Right there. That's one of their greatest hits, I Want to Be With You. Also, of course, Go All the Way, Overnight Sensation. Later on, Eric Carmen had a big hit solo career with All By Myself, Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. Later in the 80s.
Hungry Eyes.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's right. From what? That was from Dirty Dancing, right?
Right, yeah. He wrote that, and that was a big deal. That was a big hit, yeah.
And I think he also wrote Almost Paradise from Footloose.
Yeah, I think he did. I think you're right, yeah. So he did. He went behind the raspberries with his songwriting stuff. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I was a big fan. His debut solo album, 1975, just called Eric Carmen. From my standpoint, it's like a greatest hits album. There's a song called Sunrise on there. And don't forget, he wrote two big hits that Sean Cassidy covered. Remember that in the 70s?
Which ones?
He wrote Hey Deanie, and That's Rock and Roll.
Oh, yeah, I remember that pop song, sure.
Yeah, and then That's Rock and Roll.
Okay.
Little, or was it, Hey Deanie, won't you come out tonight?
Yeah.
The stars are, blah, 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 whatever it was. But, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I was sad to hear that, that he passed away, 74 years old, Eric Carmen. Another guy who passed away was Richard Lewis, one of my favorite comedians. What a loss that was.
Yeah.
Were you a big fan of Richard?
I was. I never saw him in concert, but I saw so many of his, performances on TV on, Leno and Letterman and Johnny Carson and all that. And as much as I liked his stand-up, Jim, I really loved him on Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was neat to see him, like, I could picture him really being like that in real life,
Well, both he and Larry David, they obviously the characters that they played on the show were heightened characterizations of themselves, but at the same time, they were very longtime friends. In fact, I don't know if a lot of people know the story. They found out later in life that when they were both coming up in the comic route stand-ups, that they went to the same kids' camp together and hated one another when they were like teenagers.
Right, exactly. And then they got to know each other later on, yeah.
Yeah, and so even though those characters are not exactly the way they are, I think every so often you could see that Larry David literally does laugh. It's a real laugh when Richard gives one of his great ad-libs.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorites was a couple years ago on Curb when John Hamm was a guest star, and John Hamm was shadowing Larry because they're going to make a movie about someone that's like Larry, and they tell us to Richard Lewis, and he goes, "What's the movie called? The most obnoxious bleep I've ever walked the face of the earth?" And I'm just dying.
There's a great,
just came out of his head like that.
There's a great episode. It's an early episode of Curb in one of the earlier seasons. I don't know what the name of the episode is, but it's a Richard Lewis episode. And go back if you can, if you have it on DVD, and if anybody has a DVD player anymore, but go on wherever you can find it online. There's a blind guy who Larry and Richard help move into a new apartment.
They help him move, and then that guy lied about his girlfriend lied about being really beautiful too.
Well, they are moving this guy's furniture all around, and he's telling them where to put it, even though he's blind.
Right.
Like, not there, Richard. And he's the guy they met on the street, and he starts getting very indignant. But like, Richard, I mean, now what are you? But the best part is they keep cutting back to Richard Lewis, and he is draped in sweat.
Yeah.
And it is the funniest visual. And oh, my gosh. Richard Lewis was one of the first people celebrities I ever interviewed in my media career back when we both worked at Press Publications in the Western Suburbs for a while. In 1986, I interviewed him because I used to love seeing him on Letterman.
Yeah.
And I saw him perform a couple of times. And I was lucky enough, once again, as part of Gary's show, he and Gary Meyer were very good friends. And so Richard would always come into the studio, and I got a chance to meet him several times. And we actually did a TV pilot with Richard for a local talk show. And Richard was kind enough to come in from California and be a guest on. So I got a chance to actually work with him. And he was cracking us up both on the set as well as when the cameras were off. What a loss. Sad guy. Sad. I guess he died of a heart attack. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's about a year or so ago. But really a very unique comic voice. And don't forget, remember, what was the show he did with Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah,
I can't remember the name of that now. Something.
It was like a romantic comedy.
Yeah, it was a romantic comedy. That was kind of a hit for a while, too.
Right. Well, it's ironic that you bring Richard Lewis up, Jim, because yesterday I was watching reruns of Everybody Hates Chris, and he guested on that where young Chris is in a hospital at Christmas because he's got he's sick with something, and he's complaining a lot, and Richard Lewis is his bedmate in the same room, and Richard Lewis is telling him, hey, there's a lot worse things than your problems, and it turns out when Chris tells the nurse that he was talking to this other guy, she says, you don't have a roommate in here. And it was like Richard Lewis was acting as like an angel, even though you didn't know that.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Anything but love.
I thought the funny part was Richard Lewis was always complaining about his own ailments and issues. And here he is telling someone else, hey, you don't have it so bad, okay?
Anything but love was the name of that show.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. I remember that was for a couple seasons at least.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah, it was. But a very unique comic voice. The comedian from hell. Da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I don't know. Which...
Remember he got that into the Barrett's, the quotations, right?
Yeah. I don't know what you want. I saw him the first time at a theater in Skokie. And after I came back from seeing him, this was in the 80s. For 2 days, I just kept going, I don't know why I'm doing it. I mean, I just was doing, I could not get out of doing Richard Lewis in real life.
Your head, huh?
Which really aggravated a lot of people.
I'll bet, yeah. Well, if you watch these, episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm in this last season, he was on the other night, and you could tell he was really frail from the Parkinson's and all that.
Yeah, he hasn't looked good the last couple of years, but what a shame. Just a very unique comic voice, and he certainly will be missed. One last thing here before we go. Why is it every award show screws up the In Memoriam segment?
Well, it's either between the omissions, because there's always one or two glaring ones that's like, why didn't you put this star in? They didn't just die. They died earlier in the year. Or, like, this past week, it was that screen. I didn't even know who they were showing on the screen, the way they had the angles of the cameras.
It was so poorly produced. The camera was 800 feet in the back, so you could see the dancers. You couldn't see whose name was up there. You couldn't see their name. You couldn't see their faces. This is the easiest segment to produce. You make a reel of all the people, you point a camera at the screen, and you let it run.
Right. And the other part of it, like you just said about the easy part, all you do is look back in the past year
right.
and look at the news items. And you know, there's some names that you might not have heard of before that they're people that were important in movies. But there's always a one or two that's like, wait a minute, why wasn't so-and-so in there? And it's like, you know, when you look at the year-end reviews of like CBS Sunday Morning, they don't miss a thing. You know, they mention all the people that passed and hail and farewell and all that. And why the Oscars can't do that is beyond me. It's like it's a real simple task.
Here's what you do. Starting in January, someone at the Academy, because maybe the excuse is, well, you know, we don't know who the producer is until maybe 6 months in. Okay, I'll give you that, even though it's a lame excuse. Somebody at the Academy then, because this is your show.
Yeah.
Your name is on it. Somebody's job is to every day scan the news and compile an ongoing running list of all the people, whether they are well-known, you know, actors and actresses, or maybe behind-the-scenes people, because they do get a big mix of people
sure.
that work. But it's your job every day to just go to this one little document, and if you go in the news and you see somebody passed away, you write their name.
Right, yeah. You know, look at the local papers and
right.
the reports and just chronicle it and have this list. And obviously you can't name everybody, especially
no.
those behind-the-scenes people, but there's always a major star or two. It's like, wait a minute, so-and-so was in a whole bunch of movies. Why weren't they, you know, listed this time?
Yeah, it's, I mean, Treat Williams was not apparently in there. Treat Williams was a movie star for, I mean, not, he wasn't a legend, but for a period in the 80s and 90s, he was a big deal. He was in Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah, he was a big leading man guy, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And he just died, like, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. There's no excuse for that. But the production of it, we don't need Bocelli singing. We don't
right.
need, you just have to play some nice music underneath it with not a named person, just some nice somber music. Aim the camera at the screen and let the names and the faces tell the story, because that's who you're there to celebrate.
And when you watch those montages in the past, when they are done well, you'll hear some people clapping like
of
they
course.
Remember so-and-so, or they have reaction. But you couldn't even do that. I don't even think the people in the crowd
no.
could see what was going on because
that,
of all the distractions.
Total mess. Let's put it this way. It was a bomb.
Yeah.
And that's very fitting, given what the movie of the year was.
Yeah, there you go with Oppenheimer. So
yeah.
there you go. So maybe one of these days they'll get it straight.
Oh, so simple, and yet they screw it every. And it's not just the Oscars; everybody does it. I don't get it. They you know, these are the most talented. You would think these are the most talented crews, directors, producers in the business. Right? You're doing a Hollywood show in Hollywood for Hollywood. How could it not
and
be?
You think they'd be wired into everything that's going on, or like you said, have people there that say, hey, I got to track this, and I got to tell you about this person passing or this person doing this, and they don't do that.
I don't understand it, but we'll see about next year, see how they screw that one up.
I think there's going to be a new host next year. I think the Jimmy Kimmel run may be over.
I hope so. That's he's basically has always just been a David Letterman wannabe, and, you know, I don't find him funny. He's fine for late night, but he is a small fish in a huge ocean when he's doing a global show. He doesn't have the gravitas. I'm sorry.
Well, it's that, and I don't think he just has even the respect for the movies. I mean, you don't have to be fawning, but it's just like he's kind of like the kid in the back of the classroom that's just going to make fun of every little thing he can because he can do that because he has that stage. You
Here's
know?
The thing. If Jimmy Kimmel was not on ABC, would he have hosted 4 times? If the answer is no, then the case is closed.
Right.
Well, thank you, Mick, so much for touching on some of those pop culture issues of the day, and we will talk again.
My pleasure, pal. Thanks a lot.
All right, Mick Kaler, always, always fun to talk to. And you can see some of his work on the WGN Morning News. He does a lot of parody songs that they play on the WGN News. So always be tuned to that every morning anyway, but you may hear some of Mick's work there too. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning and now this afternoon. We're in the home stretch. We'll be back after this. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. Been filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Hope you've enjoyed the show. I've had a great time doing it. Before I leave, I just did want to remind you a couple of things. First of all, as I said, Tuesday is election day, so get out there, even though the big race may already be determined. We've already got our presidential candidates in both parties. Joe Biden and Donald Trump have already won their respective nominations. But there are still some important races out there, primaries throughout the state and the counties that you live in. So do your civic duty and get out there on March 19th, Tuesday. And I also, I frequently host this St. Patrick's Day show when Dean is away. I say it in the past, I'll say it again this time. Let's not forget, you know, Chicago is a very, Irish kind of dominated, especially its politics, its mayors, the two Mayor Daleys here, which really helped imprint St. Patrick's Day as almost an official holiday here in Chicago. I went to St. Pat's High School, in fact. On the northwest side of Chicago, on Belmont and Austin, and we used to get St. Patrick's Day off. That's how cool that was. So even though I'm not Irish, I always have a little soft spot for St. Patrick's Day because we used to get that day off. It was a nice little day off in March, and I still have my St. Pat's leather armed sleeved varsity jacket and my baseball jersey and a lot of St. Pat's, apparel that I used to wear during my high school days, and still have some great Shamrock Pride. But yeah, it's on the northwest side. But the best part was we used to sell raffle tickets, and if we sold X amount of raffle tickets, we'd get St. Patrick's Day off. So thanks, St. Pat's, for that. But what I did want to mention is Tuesday is also St. Joseph's Day, which gets always forgotten because St. Patrick's Day is so big, especially here in Chicago. But St. Joseph's Day is a day that is celebrated by Italians for the most part because St. Joseph is a patron saint of Sicily. But poor St. Joseph, and let's not forget, this guy was the adopted father of Jesus. That's not a bad title. I mean, I know there were a lot of snakes in Ireland and they needed to get rid of them. But St. Joseph, adopted father of Jesus, pretty important, right? So let's give, St. Joe his props on Tuesday as well. There's still a lot of St. Joseph's Day tables where people get together and have some great Italian food and things like that at different churches and different parishes. But let's not forget St. Joe. It's tough to battle against St. Patrick's in every city, especially big cities and older cities like Chicago and Boston and Philadelphia. But I think St. Joe deserves a little props. Let's give something for the adopted father of Jesus. What do you say? Anyway, I'm Jim Toronto. I've been filling in for Dean Richards this morning. I appreciate you listening anyway. And I want to thank my guests. Today we had, Dean checking in several times from the Southside Irish Parade. We had Dr. Jeremy Silver. We had Charles Askenizer from Invictus Theater. We had Craig Duff from Northwestern. And we had Mick Kaler helping us out in our Pop Culture Club. Dean will be back next week. Fear not. I hope you had a good time. I did my best to entertain you and give you some information and fill in for Dean. But hey, we all know there's only one Dean Richards. And so fear not, Dean will be back. But I hope you had a good time today, because I certainly did in filling in for Dean. I hope I can do everything I could to keep you happy, at least, and entertain you for about 4 hours. Jim Toronto saying goodbye, filling in for Dean Richards. Thanks for listening anyway.